The following was originally produced for the national radio series Focus on the Family, featuring psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. In the first program on this cassette, Dr. Dobson speaks with his guest, Gary Smalley, about what it means to close off the spirit of a child, and then discusses ways of reopening that closed spirit. Gil Megerle gets the conversation underway.
Doctor, first up, we want to introduce a special guest who's joined us today.
Gil, you know, something exciting about this responsibility here at Focus on the Family for you and me is the opportunity to meet people that we've heard about and have just never crossed paths with, and today is one of those days. Our guest is Gary Smalley, and I'm sure many of our listeners recognize his name. Gary is the author of two books, If Only He Knew and For Better or Best. Gary is also founder and director of Family Heritage Ministries in Phoenix, Arizona. He's very active in conducting relationship seminars across the country. By that you mean marriage relationship seminar.
Marriage relationship, although we have a lot of singles there because we talk about 10 relational principles that apply in any relationship.
You're working on a doctorate of ministry in family counseling.
Well,
now
we're working on that, right.
Well, it's a delight to have you here, and you live in Phoenix there with your wife Norma and your three children, and you have written a new book,
right.
The Key to Your Child's Heart.
Right.
Now, Gary, the imagery of that implies that there is a key, which means there's a lock, and a lock is usually to hold something out. Is that what you were referring to?
Well, it's really not that complicated as far as the title of it, but probably behind that title is that there's something that takes place in a home, either between the husband and wife or between parent and child, that a lot of parents are not aware of. If it takes place, there can be some detrimental problems that result from that. There can be some things that take place that the parent is not aware of, and there can be a distancing between parent and child, and it's a gradual thing. If he's not aware of it, then if they're not aware of it, then there can be some major problems down the road. What I tried to center in on this book on one of what I think is the major problems in disharmony between parent and child, and I'd like that to be the key to a child's heart if the parent wants to build a meaningful relationship with that child through the years.
Now, you describe in this manuscript the fact that a child sometimes pulls within, closes down emotionally, and won't engage the parent because he's been hurt.
Right.
What are the sources of that pain and that hurt?
Okay. Probably the easiest way for me to explain it, I've been trying to figure out a way to say it in this type of context, and the easiest way I've been able to explain it lately is if we look at our hand and we say that the total relationship with a person is their spirit, the soul, and their body, let's say.
Right.
If I said that spirit of a person was their innermost being, the part that touches another person without any words being spoken. When we first met, it's our spirit that touches first. You know, we haven't said anything, but you're checking me out, I'm checking you out, kind of thing. You know, it's just sort of a nonverbal type of thing. And then I say that the soul, let's say, that a person is their mind, will, and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're responsive, whether they like the person, and so on. And then I say the body is just the physical makeup, and it's just a little handle that helps me understand this thing that's taking place. So what I say is that if we said the spirit is the outside tips of the finger, and the soul is sort of the middle part of the hand, and then right in the center is the body, when a parent offends a child through harshness or broken promises or any number of things that can be done, anger, criticism, unfair punishment, a lot of little things can take place. Some of them are major, some of them are not so major. It's like it affects the spirit of that child, and it's kind of like that child's spirit sort of starts closing, like our hand would close.
Mm.
And as it closes out the soul and the body. The soul, that the child isn't as responsive mentally, doesn't want to talk as much. They begin to lose their feelings. They become more resistant in their will. Parent will say, they want them to do this, they want them to do that. Take out the trash, and they become more rebellious. Probably a more significant thing is that what the parent believes is right, and the parent says, I think you ought to do this, or I don't want you to listen to that music, or I believe in God, and I think you ought to. If the parent believes it, but he's closing the spirit of his child, a child will have a tendency to think, well, if that's what you believe, then I don't want to believe it. If that's the kind of music you want me to listen to, I'm not going to. If you like those friends, I don't like them. there's sort of an underlying current of rebellion that can take place. It's not the only reason, obviously, that children rebel, but I have witnessed this in all my counseling. I've tried to put a handle on it, and I find that as their spirit closes, they become less emotionally attached. There's not as much touching. They don't like to be touched when you're closing their spirit. They can even want to spend more time away from the home. I really discovered this by working with couples in marriage groups over a three-year period with many couples.
Adults can close down
really,
like that.
Adults
too,
close
they?
Down in a hurry. And I really learned it between husband and wife, because like a husband can say something in the evening, 9 or 10 o'clock or something, and oftentimes he's not even aware that what he's going to say is going to affect her as much as it may. And so he'll say it. She'll begin to close her spirit. He'll go over and say, is anything wrong? She'll say, no. And he'll say, well, I can see something's wrong. Maybe she'll be even tearing, you know. And he'll say, did I say something? And she'll say, what? You know, did you say something? And he'll say, he'll start to touch her, and she'll be cold. Her hands will be non-responsive, you know, that feeling you get. Maybe the back's turned, you know, and he'll try to hold her, and she doesn't want to touch. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes in a relationship is because a person's spirit is closing down. But what I'm finding is that you can open a person's spirit in just a matter of minutes.
Let me give an illustration and see if this is what you're talking about. I find that parents often put their children on a defensive and treat them as enemies, right, when in fact the parent doesn't feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're just under pressure, and they're moving through the day, and
right,
there are these responsibilities that the parent has. And mm-hmm, so instead of saying, Johnny, come into the bedroom with me. I want to show you. See, there's some toys around here. How about getting that up for me?
Right.
Instead, get in there and clean up that
right
mess. You know,
right,
and they throw him
that's
on the
right
defensive and make an enemy out of him,
right,
and make him
right
have to defend
right
himself.
That's right.
When if you're careful with that spirit, you can keep
right
it open. It's kind of like
right
a little flower, isn't it? You
absolutely
touch it and it'll close
that's
down.
That's right. Just like those sea urchins in the ocean. You know, you see those little, look like little tentacles, you know, yeah, and you poke it and it closes up.
But you're not saying that the parent should not ask him to clean the room.
Oh, no, no. And as I grew up, I didn't have a mother and father who are both passed away now who trained me. I never had an example in this thing. So I had to learn all these things as I was learning how to raise my children.
Your father died when you were in high school.
I was in high school when he yeah died. And a lot of the things that I learned about my wife and parenting, some of those things I learned from some of your books, you know, as we were trying to understand these things. And I was so like a sponge. I just wanted whatever I could see that worked. But this thing of the closing of the spirit, it's. I mean, you can't just rush anywhere. It's the first chapter in this book, The Key to Your Child's Heart. And I put it there because I wanted parents to see that I see it as a major problem. Can I give an example?
Sure.
Like in my own home, that I can remember the time that when I used to be an assistant vice president of in a large Christian organization in the Midwest. And I talked to a lot of pastors all over the country because it was a national ministry. And I had a rule in my home. And I don't know where I got it, but I had this rule that nobody screams when I'm on the phone. You know, I didn't want anybody to think, you know, that my kids weren't under control because, you know, I had a reputation of holding
you can scream when you're not on the phone.
5 minutes later.
Yeah, right. But don't do it while I'm on the phone.
Sense.
That's right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was on the phone with some pastor in the master bedroom one time, and Greg, my middle child, was about 5 or 6 years old. He let out a blood-curdling scream from the bathroom. And a master bathroom, and I could hear him, and it was pretty deafening because I was having a hard time continuing the conversation. But the worst thing is he came into the bedroom, and he was really uptight, and he was screaming and jumping, you know, and I was trying to get his attention, you know, nonverbal, you know, go downstairs kind of thing. And I was even kind of swatting my bottom, you know, saying, if you don't get downstairs, you know, all this was nonverbal. Finally, I had to say to the guy, hey, I'm going to have to get back to you. Something came up, and I hung up, and I walked over to my son, and I grabbed him by the arm because, see, I was irritated that he wouldn't go downstairs. And I shoved him into the hallway, and I said, you get into your bedroom. All of this done was an impulsive type of movement. I pushed him into his bedroom. I told him to lay down on the bed. I got the stick out, you know, that we had made, you know, and decorated as a family kind of thing. And I didn't use it very often, but see, I was really irritated, and I spanked him. And I really, you know, got him. And I stood back, and I thought, you know, there, that's what you get for, you know, violating my rule. But what I saw happen was what somebody else was already trying to help me understand, is that I closed the spirit of my child through that harshness, that pushy, arrogant, superiority, demeaning attitude that I had. Well, how did I know that? Well, my child's eyes were communicating, I don't like you. And he was closing on me. He didn't want to talk. He was moving backwards. He was still crying. He was in shock that his dad would treat him this way. I was in shock. And so I had already learned from somebody that some of the best things you can do to open the spirit of a child or a parent or or a wife or a husband or anyone, you know, are several things they said are important. So what I did immediately is I dropped to my knees, and I became soft in my own spirit. I was gentle. I was grieving for what I did, but he didn't want any part of me. And
before him, he heard you pray, right?
Oh,
or was this in the privacy?
No, this was, he was standing there next to me. Yeah. I mean, he was in front of me about 5 feet now, yeah. But he was moving away. He didn't want any part of me. I didn't ask him to come and hug me because I knew he wouldn't.
Yes.
And I could have said, like some parents, you get over here right now, you know, and you hug me right now. You know, he would have waddled over and been a mechanical action, but because his spirit was closing, he didn't want to touch me and he didn't want any part of talking to me and his emotions were going. He was stubborn and you could feel that stubbornness there.
Yeah.
And so I got soft in my own spirit and I was gentle and I said, Greg, I wanted to understand. And I said, Greg, why were you crying? Why didn't I ask this before?
Yeah.
And he said, Daddy, he was still crying. He said, Daddy, I fell in the bathtub in my ear. You know, and I looked at his ear and I had not noticed his ear and it was swollen and it was bleeding. And I went, oh, man. And then he said, Daddy, when you pushed me in the hall, he says, I hit my same ear in the toy box. And then I felt, you know, like a child abuser type of thing. And I was so grieved inside. And he could see I was grieved, but he still wasn't interested in being involved with me. And
he was still hurt.
Right. And so I admitted I was wrong. In fact, I even handed him the stick. I said, Greg, I'm the one that deserves to be spanked. I'm on my knees at this point. And he took the stick and dropped it and backed up all the more. He said, he's not responding to me.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch him. But I said, Greg, do you think you could find it in your heart to forgive Daddy because I was sure wrong? He rushed to my arms. He threw his arms around me. We laid back in the bed, you know, for about a half hour. Just laid on my chest. And you know how they are.
Yeah.
You know how they are. And I just held him. And we didn't say a word. And after a few minutes, I looked at his ear and I said, Greg, are you sure everything's okay between us? He patted me and said, oh, Daddy, we all make mistakes.
Uh-huh.
Now, you know how I began to realize his spirit was opening is that he was touching me. He was talking to me, and he was emotionally responding to me. Now, as a parent, if I didn't know that type of thing, then what I can do is do one or two of these little things here and there, close their spirit. If I keep it closed on a regular basis, pretty soon it can turn to resentment. Then it stays closed. It can cement. However, I have also found that with children, as you know, almost any age, in fact, I have children 35 and 40 and 50 years old who say to me, if only my mom and dad would just admit what they said and did to me as a child. Some of them are still hung up.
It's so
because,
difficult.
But dads and moms won't come back and say, hey, I was wrong. I was insensitive. I can see I closed your spirit. So when I talk about closing your spirit, it's just a tool for me to understand what's taking place. I have husbands that call me in long distance, and you have thousands of them that call you and write you. But they call and say, my wife has left. Is there anything we can do? And the first thing I do is I call the wife, and I find out how closed is that spirit. Because a husband can open the spirit of his wife in 6 weeks, 6 months, and get right back together.
Yeah, in fact, she wants him to.
She wants him
the
to.
The time that the spirit's closed
right.
down is the time
but
the other
you know
person wants
saying?
You to open
right.
it up.
But she is saying to him, I hate you.
Yeah.
I don't want any part of you. In fact, I have a quarter against you. And he thinks, because he's a man, that she's saying, I hate you, I don't want any part of you. But what she's really saying is, oh, would you only work on opening my spirit?
Gary, how can you tell when a child's spirit is closed down? What are the symptoms? What do you look for?
Okay, the special things that I look for are in the soul and in the body. And I look for the nonverbals because quite a bit of our conversation between two people is nonverbal. It's tone of voice and facial expression. And when a child, for example, I know there are stages, like when my daughter Carrie, who's almost 18 now, when she was 12 and 13, you know, I tried to hug her, you know, and she was a little awkward, you know, kind of thing. And so Norma said, and certainly, you know, she was 14, 15, 16, you know, we can hug all the time. But there were times where she didn't want to touch. But the special things a parent needs to observe is how stubborn is his will or her will? How resistant are they to me? Is it seem out of proportion to what's happening right now? They're really resistant. Do I sense when I'm with them that they like me emotionally? Do I sense that there's a kind of an openness between us? When I ask them to do something, is there a strong will? Is there a resistance? I know there are temperaments of certain children that tend to be more strong-willed than others. My son Greg is more stubborn, for example, than my daughter Carrie. Carrie's at the temperament where she hates disharmony. So that the slightest reflection of my face that we're in disharmony, she'll say, oh, Dad, let's resolve this. But not with Greg. I mean, he can go for hours if it needs to be. You
Some
know.
Kids can go
right.
for years.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So that I have to be careful with Greg and dealing with him. And I have to be careful with Carrie, too. Carrie and Michael, my youngest, he's only 11 now. I can crush Michael's spirit with the slightest thing.
Yeah.
But Greg's a little tougher. You know, it takes a little bit more, but I can crush him because he's a tender-hearted man. But what I have found is that if I'm noticing they're stubborn, if I notice they're sort of an alienation between me, if I notice that I try to touch them and they aren't responsive to me, you know, you put your arm around them, Dad, not now, kind of thing. Immediately, red flags go up in my mind. I think, uh-oh, have I said something? Have I done something? Not a day goes by that I don't touch my children, and, of course, my wife, and hug, that if I sense something, I tell you what, it's so funny. I love watching this. If I go to put my arms around my wife, Norma, almost instantaneously comes out the thing I might have said or done that offended her and closed her spirit. I mean, it's almost like she's programmed. Yeah. Uh-huh. Nothing's being said, you know, but I can tell there's a little bit of something, and I'll just go over to me. She's in the kitchen, and I'll just say, hey, and I put my arms around her, I sure love you, and immediately there's that bristling inside. I can feel it, and she'll say, this morning when you did this, you know, and I go, here it is. But yeah. See, it doesn't happen until I touch her.
You really believe in the value of touching, don't you?
Oh, I'm a big believer in that.
Yeah. Everybody needs it.
Oh. My wife says she needs at least 15 touches a day. Of course, all the research that's out, 8 to 12 a day is what keeps their emotional and physical strength level up.
Do you need it too, Gary?
I need it too. In fact, we have a lot of family meetings to resolve some things that come up. But we had one not long ago where Greg, who's 16 now, he's the football player, the macho kind of guy right now, so he's not hugging us like he used to. So we had a meeting about it. And we said, where are we today in our hugging? You know, we go 0 to 10, you know, how's everybody doing on hugging? And Greg says, yeah, everything's okay, you know. And then Norma said, Greg, I've been trying to hug you lately, and you've been a little bit resistant. Oh, Mom, I mean, you know, just relax kind of thing, you know. And Carrie said, yeah, because I think brothers and sisters need to be hugging each other. And Carrie will say, Greg, when I try to hug you, you know, you give me this, you know, macho kind of thing. And it's like, Greg, you make me feel like you don't like me. He said, Carrie, I like you. I mean, just right now. And she said, well, would you be willing just to respond at least? And Mom said, yeah, Greg, I mean it really. And I said, yeah, Greg, I need to hug you too. I need for you to hug me.
Did he understand that?
Yes, he understood the whole thing. But now he's not still the best hugger in our home, but he does it. You know, all the rest of us are, but he's in a phase,
you know,
whatever it is.
Kids do go through that phase where they don't want to be touched. I remember it was a great shock to me.
Uh-huh.
Even though I'd read about it, I knew it was coming. Uh-huh. Danae and I had always been very physical.
Sure.
She would always be on my lap when I was watching a football game or crawling all over me. And when I'd open the front door at night, when I'd come in here, she'd come running with her arms around my neck. She turned 13 and didn't want to be touched at all. You know, went in her room and all that. Stuff. And I understood it. Mm-hmm. I understood it intellectually.
That's
I understood it educationally.
That's right.
I didn't understand it emotionally. And
exactly
it took two or three years before she was ready again to rejoin the family in that
But
way.
We talk about that. And that's all on the table. It's up front in our family. And he'll hug us now. And I'll go into his bedroom in the morning, say, give me a hug. And so, but, you know, he's working out with weights because he plays football, you know, and he'll grab it. And he basically dislocates my backbone, you know, kind of thing. And he does the thing with Mom. He picks her up, you know, because it's a kind of a strong thing right now. But that's okay. I'll take the being lifted off the floor and everything else. But I can see in his spirit that he's not closed.
So the key to your child's spirit is what? Put it in the shortest number of words.
Okay, it's keeping your relationship with your children where their spirit is open most of the time, if not all the time. And being so alert by the facial expressions that I can now tell when they're closing up on me. If I push my kids into something, like they don't want to do something, if Carrie doesn't want to play basketball and I say, well, I, as your father, I think that you ought to play basketball and I want you to listen to me because I'm wiser than you are and I've got a lot of years ahead of you, and I'm just telling you this is right, and I want you to do it. You push your kids into things where they're really against it, and you can close their spirit down and do more damage, so that I say the key is keeping their spirit open. And maybe we can talk more about how to be aware of it and how to sense it.
Gary, the illustration you gave a few minutes ago about the time you disciplined your son, spanked your son, invites a question I'd love to hear you answer.
Okay.
Can you administer corporal punishment as a parent and keep a child's spirit open?
Okay, let me respond to that first by saying that I believe you can. I think some of the people that are listening, some of the most precious times in our home has been during a spanking time. Now, some people may say, what, during a spanking time? Because we have a written contract in our home. It's a very simple written contract that we have as a family that outlines specifically when a spanking can be given and how an appeal can be made before the spanking is actually administered. And we have very few spankings in our home. Mm. In fact, Michael, who's only 11, I mean, there hasn't been two in the last two or three years type of thing. Mm. But it's so clearly outlined that what they have to do to receive one, and then after it's apparent that they should have one, then they have, right in the contract, just written, they can call for court. And this only takes seconds, you know, a couple of minutes. I remember the time that Carrie did something to Greg on the back porch, and he shoved her off the porch, and she did something else to him. And it was, I just sort of came around the side of the house, you know, and caught some of this, and Norma caught some of it. And it looked like he had, you know, had done some things, and she had done some things, but it looked like she was guilty for what she had done. So it looked like she was going to have a spanking. We had a quick discussion out in the back porch, and it looked like she was guilty. So we went into the house, and she said, I think I'm innocent, you know, kind of thing. And so I said, well, would you like to call, you know, court? She said, absolutely. Of course, they think, you know, this is whatever. He'll call for it. So we sit around the table, and this has only happened like five or six times in our family. But we go around the table. We say, okay, what are the facts? What'd you see? What'd you think happened? And Carrie will say, well, I did this. And Greg will say, yeah, but you did this. And I get all the facts, and I say, anything else? And then we have the jury, and that's all of us. Mm-hmm. And we go around the table. I say, Mom, what do you think? Guilty. Greg, what do you think? Innocent. Innocent. Mike, what do you think? You know, and then they have to give their reasons. As the facts came out, what Greg saw, it was obvious that Carrie was not guilty. And she went, oh, Greg, thank you. And it was so obvious. And all of us saw the facts. We said, Carrie, here it is. The facts are here. No
He'll
spanking.
Collect that chit the next
time. Oh, absolutely. But there are times we go around the table and it's guilty, guilty, guilty. And when we get to the person, they're guilty. And we walk into the bedroom. We close the door because we think this ought to be a private time, a serious time. I talk with them. They understand it. We breathe heavily, you know, because oftentimes they'll say, you know, like this. They'll say, Dad, how many, you know, kind of thing. And I'll say, hey, well, whatever, you know, it warrants. Sure. And we'll talk about them. We say how they breathe deep, you know, get relaxed. And actually, I have hugged them before. We've gone through the spanking. We've hugged afterwards. We've cried together. I've had times where actually Greg and Carrie were spanked in the same room at the same time. And they actually said, who wants to go first? And the others say, well, I'll go first. No, they didn't. I'll go first. You know, kind of, that's a harmonious time because spanking is used sparingly. We have another thing we use for discipline. It's a completely different thing. And spanking is something that we use as a last resort.
You know, I am sometimes seen as the guru of spanking because in 1969, 1970, when nobody was saying Dare to Discipline came out, and
right,
I supported that concept because it's biblical
right.
and because
sure.
psychologically I can see value in it.
Sure.
But like you, we did very little of it. Right. Very, very little. People would be amazed at how little spanking that we did in our family, in our home. And honestly, sitting here right now, I do not remember a single occasion for either child
right.
where a spanking was administered that it did not draw us together
right.
afterwards.
Absolutely.
After that emotional ventilation is over,
right.
the children put their arms around our
sure.
necks. We held
right.
them. We talked
right.
about how they got in trouble, how they could
sure.
avoid it next time,
absolutely.
And how painful it was to us to have
sure.
to do that.
Right.
Now, let's avoid it. Let's don't get
That's
into
right.
that anymore.
That's right.
And
absolutely.
When it's done right in that context,
right.
all of those criticisms of spanking, that it's child abuse and that it's
right.
the hostility
That's
of one
right.
generation for the next,
right.
apply to something
right.
that didn't happen in my home.
Absolutely. In fact, see, what you're saying is what you influenced me in, see, as a parent. See, you've influenced mm-hmm. people everywhere, and you've influenced our home. Mm-hmm. What you're saying is that you should spank, if you're going to spank, in respect mm-hmm. and honor, which is Romans 12:10. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love, preferring one another in honor. So when we spank, it's done in respect.
I couldn't said that better myself, Gary. That's very nice.
But on the other yeah. side of the coin, you want to close the spirit of your child in a hurry? Spank him in anger. Spank her in anger. Spank her in harshness. Spank her unfairly. Spank her without her knowing what's taking place. Vent your frustrations on your child. Then you'll close
now,
their spirit.
There are times when I have been very intense,
and I
very
have,
irritated.
I have too. And that's right.
I've spanked.
Yeah. But if I sensed I closed their spirit during that time,
yeah.
maybe the spanking was okay. But how I did it was wrong.
I think the dividing line is whether or not you are using leadership and authority
that's
in
right.
the proper
that's
sense
right.
or using
yeah.
power.
Yeah. That's right.
Now, the time where you
Absolutely.
Threw your kid around
that's
and you didn't
power.
Find out what the circumstances
that's
were, that's sheer power.
That
you're bigger than
right.
he was. That was
that's
power.
Exactly right.
But there were times when as God gets irritated at us
that's
and we
right.
feel his
that's
wrath,
right.
there are times when my
right.
kids knew that I was irritated with them as well.
Right. Well, that's why and all the people that have influenced us as a husband and wife in raising our children, the pediatricians that have trained us, you know, and everything else, our discipline came in the form of written contracts. And because we had clearly defined contracts, we didn't have to resort to the spanking that often.
Yeah. So, as you go around the country and you talk to people in seminars and you do your counseling and so on, just how common is it for a child at the age of 10 or 12 or 14 to just be crushed and have that spirit closed down?
Okay, first of all, it's everywhere that I go across this country. I spent 2 weeks in Hungary and Romania this summer. It's over there. It's everywhere we go. It's government officials towards the people. It's employees towards employers. It's everywhere. Because everyone, basically their self-centered nature, we say things, we do things that offend another person. I mean, it's in every household. There's not a household I'm aware of that people don't close each other's spirit from time to time. And it lasts for years if we don't open it up. My mother passed away a couple years ago, and I was close to her, last of six children, and my brother called me and told me that this had happened, and it hit me, you know, like a letter, a ton of bricks kind of thing, and immediately it caused a response within my wife. And in a sense, she started to lecture me, you know, like, oh, I knew something was going to happen. She said, I feel terrible about it, but she said, you haven't written her in the last, you know, several weeks, and I've been telling you to do that, and you haven't called her because I'm real busy, you know, and as you know, and writing and everything, you know, you get carried away, and I was grieved about it. I thought, oh, that's right, I haven't written her and stuff. But what my wife was doing in her harshness at that time, in her lecturing, she was lecturing me, which is an offensive thing. And I said to her, I don't need this. And
you
so
felt your own spirit closing.
I felt it's closing. Now, I can understand the concept, but it happens to me too. You know, and so she said, okay, you know, she understood what was happening, and she's a tremendous person. And she went and actually left the room and went into the bedroom and called her dad because she hadn't called him lately. And she came into the living room after she hung up with her dad, and she knelt down next to me, and she put her hand on my shoulder, and tenderly she said, I was wrong for what I said a few minutes ago. She said, you know how much I love you, and I just kind of like to ask, could you forgive me? I like that. Uh-huh. See, that I respond to that. I'm a person, a valuable member of God's family, and I don't deserve to be stepped on any more than anybody else, and she knows that. And this is probably once in 10 years that she'd do that type of thing, but it happened, and yet she responded.
Gary, we cannot deal with this issue without talking about what you have to say to the person with the closed spirit,
right?
For
okay.
whom the other person
yes.
does not
Will
come
not do
with
that.
An
okay.
apology.
Okay, we could put this in the biblical context because it really comes from the concept of forgiveness. See, the idea of the way this concept really started making sense to me was my own research of Luke 4, the Lord's Prayer, and Luke chapter 17, because it says it's impossible that we won't be offended by our brothers and sisters around us. We're going to be offended. If your brother sins against you even seven times a day, you need to go to them and rebuke them, reprove them, and that can be done in love and gentleness, and then forgive them. Well, the word forgiveness in the Greek means to release, set free, untie the knots of people who are tied up for one reason or another. Well, another way to explain the closed spirit is that when you're offensive to somebody by actions or words, you tie that person up. Because when they get angry, then the response they have can lead to resentment or even bitterness, and those are tight ropes around our heart. They limit us, they inhibit us in our relationship with another person. I mean, we want to avoid the person. It's as clear as that. Yeah. But the concept of forgiveness is two sides. Either you can watch my spirit the next time we get together and see something is wrong and say, hey, everything okay between us? And
what if I don't do that, Gary?
Okay, if you don't do that, the Lord's Prayer is the secret. If you will forgive those that step on you, trespass against you, close your spirit, then your Heavenly Father will forgive you. But if you refuse to reach out to those that offended you and forgive them, then your Heavenly Father will not forgive you. Well, if we take the word forgiveness as meaning release, set free, untie, then what we have is, if you offend me, what I can do now to open my own spirit is say immediately, Lord, would you forgive Jim? Because he didn't even really probably realize what he had done to me. And Lord, I want to pray for him right now, because if he's upset today, I want to pray, Lord, that you would bless him, encourage him today.
That takes a big man, Gary.
Yeah, but you know what that is? That's forgiveness.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do it, your Heavenly Father will not untie your knot.
Dr. Arch Hart says forgiveness is giving up my right mm-hmm. to hurt you for
That's
hurting
right.
me.
That's right. See,
I have a
is
right.
Revenge.
You hurt me, and That's I right. have a, yeah. a moral yeah. right That's to right. hurt you back.
Exactly
but
right.
forgiveness is giving up that yeah. right.
Well, I think the major thing that I learned, see, a wife that's listening right now whose husband has offended her, she could do what I did several years ago. A child has been offended by a parent can do this. An employer, employee, I mean, a coach can do this towards a player. I was so offended by another Christian several years ago that my spirit was so closed that I was dragging on the ground. I mean, I couldn't get over it. I mean, I wanted revenge. You know, I had all the emotions of, ooh, I didn't want to be near the person. You know, all the emotions of my spirit closing. I'm a runner, a long-distance runner. So I ran on this in Texas. I was running on this golf course every morning. Every morning I would cry out to the Lord. I'd say, Lord, please release me. I didn't even know I was praying, Father, please forgive me, which is release.
Yeah.
After 2 years of running on that golf course, every morning, and long distances through the streets and things, finally the Lord taught me that if I would realize that this person who offended me has their own unresolved conflicts and their own unmet needs, that's the reason they offended me in the first place.
Yeah.
And if I hadn't taken it so personal, but I was too immature to handle it. So then all I did was say, Lord, tell me why that person offended me. And little by little over the weeks, the Lord began to give me wisdom as to why he did this to me. And you know what happened to my heart? I became compassionate towards the person instead yeah. of... And then I was free inside. God yeah. untied me, and that's what the Lord's Prayer says.
People with closed-down spirits
right.
tend to close other people's
yes,
spirits,
don't they? Yes, they do. Absolutely. Because, see, it's the antagonistic bitterness that they carry around with them. And then they sort of a floating bitterness go and antagonize this person, antagonize that person. Then what we have is if a person marries with a resentment towards their mother or father, it diminishes the possibility of them having a wholesome relationship with their mate.
Gary, a few minutes ago, you said you'd learn 5 ways
yeah,
to
right.
open somebody's
okay.
spirit.
Yes, okay.
We ought to go back and list
okay.
those.
Okay, and we could go back even to like with Greg, you know, when I offended him in that bedroom that time. What I'm finding is that the first thing a person needs to do, like a husband who knows his wife has closed him out now. Her spirit is closed. If he becomes soft and gentle in his own heart and spirit with her, that's facial expression, that's tone of voice, it's the whole works. That comes from Proverbs, the 15th chapter, verses 1 through 4. It says, a soft answer turns anger away. Sometimes just softness can turn it away, can start to open the spirit of a person. Number 2, when we increase our understanding of why they closed us out and closed up on us. Understanding and softness often are the only two things that are needed to open the spirit of a person. I'll just give you an example. In working with one of the linebackers of one of the major football teams in our country, he's an all-American, all-pro, tough individual, stepped on his wife's spirit during one of our pro conferences, okay? They met me in the restaurant and said, what are we going to do now? And we got together and I said, do you see what's happening? He says, yeah, I know. I've stepped on my wife's spirit and she's closed up on me. What do I do? He tried to do some things with her, but it just wasn't working out because she was saying things like, oh, you don't mean this anyway. Or you'll never do this again unless he's here. And he kept saying, I can do this. You know how tough they are anyway. Now, I can do this and I can learn this. But she wasn't responding. He wasn't listening to her nonverbals. Because what you want to listen to is how closed a person's spirit is. A man can come home after work or something, and they can get together at night. He can say, hi, hon, I'm home. She can say, yeah, big deal. And he can say, well, is anything wrong? Nope. He can say, well, I did something? Are you kidding? And he can say, well, he can try to touch her. Don't touch me. You always do this to me. The word always, said with that tone of voice and facial expression, means a woman's spirit usually is just closed a little bit. Not a lot. But if he comes home and she says, ooh, you know, and he says, hey, what's wrong with you today? And she says, I am so bent with you. When you left this morning and what you did to me, I mean, ooh, and you always do this, and I don't know if you'll ever change. That means her spirit's closed a lot more. Now, she still wants to talk. She still wants her spirit open. But a lot of times a man doesn't recognize that her spirit is closed more with the more harsh words and the more vocal expression. Now, if he comes home and the front door's locked, And he goes to the back door, and it's locked.
That's called
and he's
closed.
Knocking on. Yes, and then she shouts through the door, "You just get out of here because I got a court order against you, and just forget this relationship because it'll never work out." What that means, her spirit is closed tightly. The fist is closed. But you know, as I've found out, a man can still enter back into relationship with that woman. And oftentimes what it starts with is softness and understanding. Because he hasn't been understanding. See, usually he's offended her over the years, or she's offended him over the years. And it's so tight now, it's going to take, you know, some time, but it can still be done. So I said with this pro athlete, I said, "Well, let me play like I'm you for a minute." So I reached across the table and I put my hand on her hand. And I said, "You know, I love you so much. And, you know, we're committed for life. And I don't want to live this way. And I know you don't. And you know how much I really love you. I just want to understand again, how have I made you feel? Can you help me? I don't want to do this. And I know you don't want to live this way." And if a man is still soft and he says things like, "You know what? You deserve a medal. Just putting up, how do you live with a guy like me?" I mean, I'm telling you, women soften. Children soften. If we were persistent.
Gary,
that's two of them.
Let me, before we go on to the others, let me ask you a really tough question.
Yeah, okay.
What do you run into and how do you get around it when you got two closed spirits trying to talk to one another?
Okay, well, can we put it in the biblical context
sure.
first? The scripture says that the husband is the head of the home, the head of the wife. He's the lover. If a Christian husband can say to himself, "Lord, give me the strength, because the greatest among us is the servant of all. Give me the strength to initiate here. Give me the strength to take the initiative to begin opening my wife's spirit first." Somebody has to start. And biblically speaking, the admonition is to the husband. Let's say we have a husband, though, that has a temperament where he's just wiped out. He's feeling inadequate in his job. Well, then the wife can say, "Hey, listen, somebody's got to start this." And she can become soft and say, "You know, I don't like talking to you the way I do. And I don't like some of the things I've said to you and running you down. And I don't want to live this way." One of the best things they can say is, "Aren't we committed for the rest of our life?" Mm-hmm. More change comes quicker with least resistance than any method I'm aware of today. And if a husband and wife are aware of this method, they can open each other's, they can open their spirit so quickly, it even amazes me. And I've just really started understanding it the last 2 years. And I've tried to express it in this book, Key to Your Child's Heart. But I'm understanding it more and more as I get into it. But anyway, we've just gotten to the...
You know, the Bible says that the eyes of the Lord are moving back and forth across the earth looking for a righteous man.
That's right.
Every now and then, as I sit here in the studio, my mind does that. It moves back and forth across the country, wondering who's listening to us and wondering what specific circumstances we're speaking to.
Right.
And I can envision today that we are talking directly to someone who knows they've closed down their mate or their child.
Right.
And the Lord is gently saying, "See, now I've been trying to tell you this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you beginning to understand what I want you to do?
Right.
I want you to open that spirit."
Right.
And you do it with love and with understanding and with softness.
Oh, sure. And just by the slightest thing we say to a person, we can close them down. The slightest thing we do. Let me give you another illustration about how easy it is to close a person's spirit. Several years ago, my wife did a very logical thing. She took our little mini motor home, went to the store to get something for dinner because I hadn't gotten home. We only had one car. But in doing so, she ran into the house because the outside is much wider, and she sheared off a big section of the roof. It hit the driveway, you know, put a huge hole in the motor home. Well, immediately, you know what happens with a person's spirit when that kind of thing happens? They become very hesitant and wondering what the husband's going to say. Well, I came home.
What happened to your spirit?
Yeah, right. Okay, I came home, and I pulled into the driveway, saw the puzzle all over the place, and I have to admit to you that nothing wholesome came to my mind. You know, only lectures came to my mind, only things that would have closed my wife's spirit down. I mean, immediately I wanted to say, "Oh, no, $500, you know." And at that time, you know, the income was lower, and we just, I thought, "Oh, my heaven, where'd you get your driver's license anyway?" You know, a lot of things came to my mind. But I sat in that car with my son, Greg, and I thought, "Lord, give me the power to do what I know I need to do right now." And I didn't feel like doing it, but I knew I needed to do it. And I even had a discussion with Greg. I said, he was just a little kid, you know, 7, 8 years old. I said, "What are we going to do?" And Greg says, "Well, Dad, why don't you do what you teach?" You know, I said, "Well, that's a good idea." So I got out of the car, and I went towards her.
Oh,
yeah, that's right. When she came around the side of the house, she started crying immediately. All I did was put my arms around her and hold her. Now, you can be nonverbal, you know, kind of thing, squeeze them in, but I was just silent. I never said a word. I just told her I loved her. I let her cry. If I had started to lecture her, she said, oh, I feel terrible. I wrecked the house. You know, I wrecked the car, you know, everything. She had told the neighbors across the street, and they're watching to see how you're going to respond, you know, but I didn't say a word. I just held her. And I could have said some things to really close down her spirit, but I had to ask, which I would encourage anybody listening, when you really need that strength to do what we know we need to do, take the time right there and say, God, give me the strength to do this. I need it right now. Lord.
Sometimes everything within you taking you in the
that's
other
right.
direction. The natural
and,
temperament
and you go ahead
is,
and right, I know. Yeah, and you, and awesome. I do that, and I read that in your books, you know. And when I read it, I laughed out loud because that's me, too. And I write those same kinds of books about relationships. And I know that I can go home and blow the whole thing, too. But what I like about what I'm learning is the hope in knowing that when I blow it, minutes, hours, even a day later, I can go back to my wife and kids and say, I was wrong.
You talk about emotional word pictures
yeah, right.
in this book. What
That's
do you
right.
mean by that?
Well, an emotional word picture is used in the context of that book of motivating a child to adjust some behavior, but it's also used to motivate a husband and wife, or it's used to praise a person, or it's used to enter into an intimate understanding of a person I'm living with.
Well, give me an example.
Okay.
What's an emotional word picture?
Okay, let me try to define it. It's an emotional word picture is when you tap a person's emotions with a story in order to teach a truth. Probably the best example of this is when the Old Testament in 2 Samuel chapter 12, when David had witnessed Bathsheba on the roof, you know, and he got turned on and he invited over to his house. He had an affair with her. He gets her pregnant. He's not repenting. He's not, he doesn't seem to be that worked over the whole thing. And so God sends an emotional word picture through Nathan.
Yeah.
And what Nathan did is Nathan tapped David's emotions first. A lot of people make a mistake. Now, one of the greatest, where I learned this was at Marriage Encounter.
Yeah.
But sometimes in Marriage Encounter, a person gives an emotional word picture before the other person feels it. And a lot of people that have been to Marriage Encounter come to me and say, well, I tried that and it doesn't work as well as I'd like it to work and so on. And when they've given me their examples, just yesterday, for example, the person came up and said, well, I told my husband that I felt like I was crumbs that he was pushing off the table and they were hitting on the floor. And now the crumbs are even becoming less frequent. I said, well, the reason that wasn't effective with your husband is because you didn't give him time to feel anything. You gave your emotional word picture too quickly. I said, what you need to do is the kind of thing David did, with Nathan did with David. See, what Nathan did is Nathan got David's anger up first by saying, what do you think about this guy, this rich guy that takes this man's only sheep? It was a pet. The kids were hanging onto the leg as they were dragging out of the house, you know, and they were weeping, saying, this is unfair. You know, there's nothing right about this. And David said, you're right. That man deserves to die. And in fact, he's going to pay fourfold right now. See, the emotion juices are flowing.
He got his attention.
Yeah,
no
see,
doubt
the
about
juices
that.
Are flowing. Yeah. That's what's important. Then Nathan says, David, you're the man. Then there's conviction. Well, that's what I find in my home. I'll give you an example with my kids. You would have an identification with this. I travel at least twice a month to some part of the country and do these seminars. And when I come home, the kids are hugging me. Hi, Dad. Welcome. You know, we prayed for you and all that thing. And it's a great reunion. Except that when Greg was about 12 or 13 years old, he would reject me for 2 hours after I got home. Every time. And I would say to him, I'd go into his bedroom, how'd your day go? You know, how'd your week go? Greg, fill me in. He said, Dad, later, I'm busy, you know. I try to hug him. He said, no, Dad, you know. All those nonverbals that maybe I'd close your spirit. I thought, I'd check with him. And it seemed like everything was okay. And I'd say to Norma, what's wrong? She'd said, almost always she'd say, well, he's in this phase, you know, he's managed because you're gone. And this is just a little way, you know, punishing you, and he'll get over, you know. But then one day I thought, hey, wait a minute. I'm an important member of this family. You know, I'm a valuable member. Why should I put up with this? Plus, is it really good to help him develop a habit of rejecting people when he's unhappy? No, that's not right. So I said, hey, I'll try an emotion word picture. He's only 12 years old. Will it work with a kid? So I took him out to breakfast. I said, Greg, can I tell you a story? He said, yeah, Dad. He's eating away, you know. And I said, I want you to pretend that you're on a basketball team. You're a starter, you know. And everybody loves you, and you're a vital part of the team. But one day you develop this little problem behind your ear, and I take you to the doctor. He has minor surgery right in the office, but you can't play for 3 weeks. And when you finally come back, you know, you can hardly wait to get back to the team, but the coach is ignoring you, the players are ignoring you, and the guy that took your place is obviously ignoring you. And you're on the bench saying, hey, coach, you know, here I am, and everybody's ignoring you. I said, Greg, how would it make you feel if day after day they kept ignoring you? He said, oh, he's eating away. He said, Dad, boy, I'd hate that. I wouldn't like that at all. So you got the juices flowing. Yeah. Then I said, Greg, that's a little bit how Dad feels when I come home from a trip. And you know how you kind of reject me in the first couple hours? And he said, Dad, I didn't know you were, you know, that it was that big of a deal. He said, Dad, I didn't know you were hurting. And he says, I won't do that anymore. And I just thought, well, let's see how it works. The next time I took a trip, it was about 2 weeks later, and he says to me, everybody was saying goodbye, Dad, we'll pray for you and so on. He says, hey, Dad, have a great trip. Oh, and Dad, get ready to be rejected when you get home. Now, he never rejected me.
Is that right?
That was the last time.
You made it a conscious thing and an understanding.
Because he felt it. I mean, my wife uses these on me. I use them on her. I mean, we don't forget these emotional word pictures.
Gary, before we went on the air today, we were talking about an interview that Gil and I had done here with Dr. Donald Joy, where we were talking about left brain and right brain. Right. And he made a point that day that men are left brain oriented. Right. And because of that, for physiological reasons, we are stirred by stories more than concepts.
Exactly right.
That if you want to communicate with a man, you do so with an illustration, with a story.
Exactly.
And that many ministers don't know that. Absolutely. And they stand up and give 3 points and it misses the men altogether.
Exactly.
But the greatest storyteller of all times was, you know who, Jesus Christ.
Right.
And you talk about emotional word pictures.
Right.
Can
mm-hmm.
you imagine how he must have described the beggar laying outside the door with flies crawling into sores, utter misery and poverty and rags, starving, his ribs are showing. And he looks inside at this table that's loaded with food from one side to the other, and these people sitting there stuffing themselves with it, with stuff just falling off onto the floor, and the beggar thinking, if I could just have what's left over.
Right.
You know, you can imagine how he really told that.
Exactly.
We don't know how he told
it.
We just know the way the disciples reported it.
Right.
But he was painting emotional word pictures.
Exactly right.
And men were listening and men were moved.
Absolutely. The kingdom of God is like a man who sells all that he has to get this field with that pearl. You know, and the woman who lost the coin. All those are stories. They get people's emotions going. The kingdom of God is like that, he said. Well, that's what I do. When I want to teach my kids a real important point or truth about scripture, I make a story up. The other day I took Mike out. He's 11 years old. I had this story so involved about this cat that had ringworms. I don't even know if cats can get ringworms. But I mean, the thing was so involved. He was into it. And he says, Dad, what happened to that family? I said, the whole family got it, Mike. But the problem is it was all internal. It was on their organs. They couldn't see it. I said, Michael, it was incredible what it did to that family. He says, Dad. And I said, Michael, do you know that you're doing something right now in our home that if we don't catch it now, it can cause things that we don't see, but it'll happen maybe a few years? He said, Dad, what is it? I want to stop. That was an emotional word picture.
What was it he was doing?
Yeah,
tell me quick.
It was some of our eating habits that we started developing. You know, and some of those things are going to get on our heart and various other things. And he needed to know because he's got the same pattern I have. But I tell you, you talk about interest. Emotional word pictures are incredible. I watched a woman spend 5 minutes in Seattle with her husband, wealthy family, lovely couple, everything they want. But he'd been doing one thing to her for 20 years that was offending her. Those all the time she tried to explain it logically, and he was hearing it on the left side of his brain. Nothing worked. I taught her how to use emotional word pictures. She used two of them in 5 minutes. It so convicted him that he's not offended her one time in 2 years, and he's not forgotten that story any day.
Gary, you were giving 5 keys to your child's heart. You only got through 2 of them. We just tease people and tell them that they're just going to have to read the book for the other 3. That's a cop-out, but our time's gone.
Okay.
Maybe you can tell me the other 3.
Yeah, okay.
But it's been a pleasure having you here, and I hope you'll come back through Los Angeles in the near future and drop by to see us again.
Thank you so much. This has been a real, real privilege.
And with that, we come to the end of the first program on this cassette. We continue now with more from Gary Smalley, who's joined this time in the studio by his associate, Dr. John Trent. Together, they share some practical ways in which parents can bless their children by assuring them they are loved. And program co-host Mike Trout gets the conversation underway.
Well, let's see, Doctor. There are occasions when we have a new friend in the studio with us, and an occasion when we have an old friend in the studio with us.
Yeah, one of each today.
Today we've got both of them with us.
Well, I want to welcome them both. In fact, we're here today to talk about their book, and I've been hearing so much about this book, and I'm delighted to have a chance to interview the authors because it makes a great contribution. Before I talk about the book, let me talk about the authors. With us is Gary Smalley, who is a nationally known speaker and writer on family relations. His greatest distinction is he's been here before.
That's
on
right.
Family. Gary also serves as president and executive director of Today's Family in Phoenix, Arizona. And he and his wife, Norma, have three children, ages 20, 19, and 13. I had dinner with Gary and Norma last night. You are special people, and I'm glad to have you here.
It was our privilege to be there, that's for sure.
Okay, working alongside Gary in this ministry is Dr. John Trent. John holds a Ph.D. in marriage and family counseling, as well as a master's degree in New Testament Greek from Dallas Theological Seminary. And you all collaborated on this book. And did I get your bio correct?
Yeah,
you're smiling.
That's great. And it's a thrill to be here.
And you and your wife, Cynthia, are the proud parents of a little baby girl.
That's
What's
right.
her name?
Well, actually, her name is Carrie. We named her after Gary's oldest daughter because we're just thrilled with Carrie Smalley and love Gary's family. And so we really named her after after older Carrie.
Of course, you got a raise, of course, after that.
If we have another child, it's going to be either Danae or Ryan.
Who would that be? Well, a book that we're going to talk about is called The Blessing, and it's a beautiful book, by the way. I think that's one of the most aesthetic books I've seen this year. But the script at the top says, no matter your age, the approval of your parents affects how you view yourself and your ability to pass along that approval to your children, spouse, and friends. Many people spend a lifetime looking for this acceptance. The Bible calls the blessing. So the title of the book is The Blessing. Obviously, you make reference to the Old Testament there, don't you? That immediately connotes Jacob and Esau and some of the other instances of blessing from one generation to the other. And that is your frame of reference.
That's right. When we began to look at this concept in the Old Testament, actually we were seeing it every day in our counseling office. We were seeing people coming in and saying that for years they had sought and tried to find that acceptance and a feeling of being valuable to their parents. Well, as we went to the scriptures, and that's where we looked, was with Jacob and Esau. All of a sudden we saw someone who was saying the very same thing that they were. He was crying out after missing out on the blessing from his dad and saying, if I could only have that blessing, and do you only have one blessing, my father? Well, in the Old Testament, if you missed it once, it was gone forever. The exciting thing is today, and what we talk about in the book, is that parents today can take those elements in the blessing, the ones that Esau missed and Jacob got, and they can actually build those into their children today on an everyday basis.
It seems a little unfair, and who am I to criticize Old Testament patriarchs, but it seems a little unfair that they only had a blessing for the elder child and only for the male child. You obviously are not making that suggestion, are you?
Well, no, and actually, as we got into this, what we discovered was that there isn't just a blessing just for the older child. There was a specific blessing for the older child, but actually what we discovered was, like in Genesis chapter 49, there's 12 sons. All 12 of them receive a blessing. And we studied the rabbinical traditions. We met with rabbis, and what we found out was that there was actually a blessing that mothers gave to their daughters. There was a blessing that fathers gave to each of their children, but also a very specific blessing to the oldest son. So this idea of blessing kids was one that was for everybody in the family, and both mom and dad got involved in it. We never knew that until we got into researching this.
Well, what was transmitted at the time of that blessing? What did the blessing consist of? What was its purpose?
Well, every time we saw this, Jim, in Scripture, both the Old Testament and New Testament, in fact, the time that Christ rebukes the disciples and asks the little children to come unto him, and then he touched them and he blessed them, every time we saw that somebody was being blessed, they always use certain elements. They're always present there, like touch and spoken word and different things. So we saw this pattern over and over again, and then we began to see that these are the same things that we could do today for our children. So I had, in fact, as we really started isolating this, we realized that we were both really already doing a lot of these things, but it made it so much simpler for me to be able to see how, very specifically, I could literally give my children a blessing, and they then would, I wanted to do everything I could to make sure that my children leave our home feeling approved. So we looked up, in fact, we looked up the word blessing in the Old Testament in the Hebrew, and it comes from the word bending the knee, forcing a camel down on its knee. In other words, sort of bowing in the presence of somebody that's very valuable.
Mm.
So when we bless someone, it's not just our children, too. We can bless friends, we can bless our parents, you know, all kinds of things. But we saw that what it really means is attaching a high value to a person. It's showing and saying that a person is very, very special. And then we began to realize that if a person doesn't receive this during his childhood, that it does have a very negative effect on their life for their entire life.
Now, in the Old Testament especially, the blessing had the connotation of property rights and material blessings and so on, but you mean it in a little different way than that.
That's right, Jim. What we mean is not so much the idea of property rights, because for the firstborn, for example, they did get a double portion of the inheritance. So they got more property and more cattle, more land. But there has always been a part of the blessing that had to do with the relationship that was there as a part of parent and child. And that's what the, for example, Orthodox Jewish homes have continued to pass on to their kids. They don't necessarily pass down the rights of inheritance, but they say that relationship-wise, there's some things that we can continue to pass down to our kids. So that's what we're really honing in on.
What is it then that you want to say when you're giving a blessing to your child? What are you trying to communicate?
What's really at the heart of the whole book is that we wanted to give parents something real specific that they could give to their children as they're growing up, or even if they've already left home. Because we know of some 30, 40, 15-year-old children that would love to have mom and dad come back into their life and let them know in specific ways that they're really approved of. We meet these people everywhere. And so what we wanted to communicate was, here are five practical, simple, and yet very profound, they have a profound effect, we could say, on a person if they're given on a regular basis. And that's what we wanted to communicate, because we see how valuable it's been in our own children's lives and in the lives of a lot of people we've counseled.
Okay, let's talk about those five components of the blessing. What's the first one?
Okay, well, the foundational one, and it's really, I guess I'm learning more and more as I get into the scripture, it's probably the most important relational principle that I know of, and that is making a decision that someone else is very valuable. It's really another way of saying that we honor them. We're standing in the presence of somebody extremely valuable. They're very important, highly significant, worthwhile. They're worth my time and energy and so on. Well, a lot of children grow up without ever feeling that. They never hear from mom and dad. They wonder, for example, if there's been a separation in the home, or maybe they're adopted. They wonder, did mom and dad ever, did they care at all about me? And so it has a real effect on their life. So we start the whole thing off by saying that when we bless our children, we literally as parents make a decision to place high value on them. And it's kind of like this. Let's say 0 to 10. 0 is something, a very low worth, the lowest value, and 10 something high. It's the highest value. We say, where are our children in our own thinking? Are they very important? Are they up in the 8, 9s level? And when we do that, it's kind of a reflection of what Christ gave us. He said that wherever a person's treasure is, that's where their heart is also.
Yes.
So what we treasure is where our feelings are, and our, you know, we want to be there and that kind of thing. So if we're not treasuring our children or our friends or our parents or whatever, then there are those problems that come.
We should have clarified this before we started into that five-part description, but you're not talking about one blessing at one time. You know, when we begin to talk about what you just said, it's right. Obvious that it may be a daily blessing.
Absolutely. Right. In fact, it is a daily blessing that we give to one another. And again, I think one of the reasons why this has been sort of a popular idea is because we all of us are searching for our own worth, our own value. Are we valuable? And it's certainly strengthening when someone comes up to us and says, you know, I really appreciate this about you, or I really, you know, whatever. When they make us feel like we're very valuable, like you're actually, we sense this every time we're around your organization, you and your employees. And even today, this morning, you sent a message for us to get it. And the way you did it was so honoring. It was like blessing us. Mm-hmm. It made us feel valuable. And you apparently have made a decision that people are important. So you're blessing a lot of us by making that decision.
You just blessed me by making that statement. That is important to us. And it really pleases me if you feel that when you're here. I hope everybody does, because we are all of equal worth, and that ought to come through.
It comes from the very beginning. You come to the receptionist right on up.
Well, and Jim, the other thing, when it comes to kids too, but people in general, anyone, but kids in particular, their radar system is really attuned to whether or not they're being treated as valuable.
Absolutely.
We've had so many people tell us that their pet poodle, this one woman told us recently that her mother felt that her pet poodle was more important than her daughter was. The reason why was because this, every time she would talk to the pet poodle, she would use a nice tone of voice. She'd, you know, take time and let the animal cuddle up to him. But when it came to her daughter, she was rough, unreachable. And kids almost have a radar system to say, where am I at? 1 to 10. We may say they're a 10, but if they see it as a 2, they're not going to respond.
And they read those cues. It amazes me how well they read it. They assess that quicker than almost any other component in the home. Mm-hmm. And you're saying to make a conscious effort to extend that kind of blessing on a daily basis, if possible.
Sure, because a lot of parents are not aware that they can make a decision to value someone, and it will affect their emotional response to that person, their physical response, their attitude. In fact, when I think of the scripture, I think of Proverbs, the 15th chapter, that talks about excited eyes or bright eyes communicate to a person that you're valuable. I'm in the presence of somebody really important because I'm so excited about being with them, kind of thing. Hmm. And I think that parents don't realize that's not something we should try to fake. That comes out of valuing someone.
It's a manifestation of a value system.
Right. I wonder how much of that is absorbed by us as parents when we have our first child and we're told that one of the most difficult things we'll have to face is the discipline of that child. Mm-hmm. And so discipline becomes such a big thing, and we're constantly thinking about disciplining properly and putting those parameters around that child. And so we're disciplining all of the time rather than balancing that with love and affirmation.
Mike, that is exactly why in my first book 17 years ago, Dare to Discipline, on the cover, I put that simple little scale with kind of a triangular thing in the center at the fulcrum, is that what you call it? Mm-hmm. And love on one side and control on the other. The discipline must be balanced by that atmosphere of affirmation and love, and vice versa. And you tip it either way, and you get into some trouble.
In fact, that's why we discipline, because we value them so much. How many times have we heard of the studies where when a parent doesn't value a child, they don't discipline them?
Hebrew 12, as a matter of fact.
That's exactly right.
It's right there. All right, let's talk about the second component.
Well, the second component was every time in the Old Testament that a parent blessed a child, there was always meaningful touch involved. Every time. And one of the things they've done studies about how physically, and you've talked about that too, even on this program, about how physiologically when we touch someone, it's healing to them. Their hemoglobin level goes up. Now, if I reached out and touched, you know, my little daughter, she wouldn't say, oh, great, Dad, my hemoglobin level is going up. You know, she wouldn't say that. But there's something chemically that even takes place. But even more important, there's something symbolically that takes place. Jim, you know, and Mike, I could tell you a story real recently. We just heard of a man who here in California had a major heart attack. He was in his 50s. His dad was in his 80s. And we were on a radio talk show, and he called in and told us this story. And to his knowledge, his dad had never hugged him, had never held him, certainly had never told him that he loved him, ever, that he could remember. Well, now the son, 51-year-old son, is dying. He's in a hospital. And so the father flies across country to his bedside. And he said, you know, my dad never did say, even then, that he loved me. But he did something. He reached out and he just took his hand. And he held his hand for just about an hour. He just sat in the bed and held his hand. Well, 2 days later, the 80-year-old father died. This man who had a heart attack lived, ended up living, had a massive heart attack, he ended up living. But he says, you know, to this day, I know that my dad loved me. He could never say it, but I knew it by just that one act of touch.
Blessed him through holding his hand.
That's right. Just that it can be so powerful, just that one act.
You know, I know in your book you made reference to Jesus and the leper. That story has great meaning for me when you are aware of the laws at that time regarding lepers. You know, we think of AIDS patients today as being scary. We want to stay away from them. I regret what we say to those who are sick with any disease like that. But the leper had to shout unclean when anybody came near them. They had to keep their distance, and no one ever touched them. And yet Jesus walked up to the leper and not only spoke to him, but reached out and touched him, which was just unthinkable at that time. And it was a way of blessing him.
Well, right. And Jim, I think that, like in my own home, for example, the last of six children, and I don't really remember seeing my mom and dad doing anything to reflect love and, you know, caring and value type of thing. There was a lot of arguments and those kinds of things. So I had to learn a lot of this stuff on my own after marriage and my wife, Norma.
They did not hold you?
No, I don't remember them ever holding me. So that when I married, in fact, I even told my wife, Norma, before we married, I asked her if she'd marry me, and then I qualified it by saying, now, I'm not going to be one of those touchy-huggy kind of guys, so I just need to tell you that up front, you know, because that's not me type of person, even while we're dating, you know. But I didn't see I didn't always see my brothers and sisters doing that type of thing either, but I didn't realize until later that that has a lot to do with, as an adult, your own interest in touching people is where you came from that kind of home, and a lot of people did not. Anyway, I had to learn to do this. But then I began to read things like some studies that have come out of various universities where, like, the average woman needs from 8 to 12 meaningful touches a day in order for her to maintain her health level and emotional level and so on. And I have certainly seen that in my own home. And so, I mean, I had to make a decision, literally. Like, parents will have to make a decision, those who are listening, because we can't say, well, I'm just not a touchy kind of a person. You know, I don't like that kind of thing. And so I'm not going to do it, and I'll just tell my children that I love them and that I value them, but I don't need to touch them. That's something so important because in some medical journals that I've read, touching is not only essential for normal growth and development, but it's essential for life itself because of how it stimulates so many things in our body to bring health to us. And so I just began to do that. I just started learning how to hug. And even, you know how sometimes you go into some churches in the country and as soon as you get into the church, you know, six people are hugging you before you get to your chair. Other churches do not do that. But when I was in those churches, and some of them in the south part of our country, I felt real uncomfortable. I thought, oh, I don't want to come back here, you know, kind of thing. But I learned how to respond to that. And then I realized the reason I'm having such a hard time is because I wasn't hugged as a kid.
You know, the needs that you have as a child are so intense that they follow you into the adult years. And it's interesting to me that for all of us, John, yourself included, who work with people who have emotional needs, they often represent a childish need that wasn't met, and they're still reaching. Mm-hmm. You know, if a woman especially had a bad relationship with her father, she is still reaching for that relationship somewhere in another man or from her own father. She's still trying to get him to play the role that he should have played. This last weekend, I flew home from Florida, where I'd been for a conference for a couple of days. And I flew with a woman who seemed secure and almost a little gruff. She certainly didn't seem to have a lot of emotional needs, and we were chatting and began talking about her daughter. And this woman was divorced, had been divorced twice, and she began to cry and told me how her daughter had never had her needs met by her father, who's this woman's husband, and that she constantly expects him. Now, at 28 years of age, she constantly expects him to be different and to change and to be what she needs him to be, and he always disappoints her. You know, he never comes through. He never gave her the blessing of either touch or the verbal blessing, and it's a void today. Here she is, a 28-year-old woman. She's on with her career, on with her life, and yet that emptiness is still there. You run into that all the time.
We see it all the time. And, you know, one of the exciting things about this book, The Blessing, is that some of the children in their 30s and 40s have finally come to the place where they realize, my mom and dad, they are not going to give me this because they never received it. They don't even know how to give it. They wouldn't see it if it was right in front of them. So why don't I give it to them? We got one neat story up in one of the cities in our country where this gentleman called his father and said, "Dad, I just want you to know I love you." And the dad hung up on him. He called him back and said, "Dad, I want to tell you I love you." Hung up on him again. So then he said, "I'm going to call him one more time." So he called his dad and he said, "Dad, don't hang up on me this time. I want to tell you I love you." And his dad did not hang up. They talked for a few minutes. But what happened was that this dad was an alcoholic. And then what happened is that he was so moved by his son's response to him that he checked himself into a rehabilitation center. And months later, because of the response his son had to him, his son led him to the Lord. And now the two of them are going around trying to make sure the other children are blessed.
And it began with the blessing.
Oh, absolutely. Because you can reverse this whole thing. I think, Jim, one of the neatest things that we heard recently was that a fellow who was paralyzed from his waist down, when he was in high school, he was so discouraged, and he contemplated suicide so many times. He thought, "What use am I? And I'll never amount to anything." And two different men, the same year, valued him enough, and they had no idea what this was going to do to him, but they came up to him on separate times and said, "You know what? You have such a great voice. You know, you make a great radio announcer. You got to think of that when you get out of school and go into that area." Both of them said that to him. He does it today full time. He said, "If those two men hadn't said that to me, they really blessed him, you know, by taking the time." And they probably thought, "That's such a small thing, you know, big deal." But it changed the guy's life and gave him a lot of hope.
So this is not just within the family that you're talking about. When you go to church on Sunday morning, you look for who you might touch
and
who
bless.
You might bless.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say, in a home context, and we use this all over the place, churches particularly, but in a home context, we recently ran across a survey that was a study of the class of 1954 at Harvard University, just the women. And it was a longitudinal study that went over 20-some years, and what they discovered was that for these women, they tended to level out in terms of their success, both in relationships and vocationally, to the degree that dad valued them. And you know, we just see that
so often, and that's one of the things we tried
to do with the Blessing Book, is we tried to give dads in particular and try to motivate men in particular to make sure that they're building these elements in these in their kids. Jim, we ran across another study where a guy named Dr. Mark Holanders back in Michigan studied over 150 women who had had three or more unwanted pregnancies. Most of them were prostitutes. But that was his population sample. And what he came to the conclusion was that in every case that he talked to, without exception, those gals had never been appropriately touched. Because I know there's somebody who may be saying, "Well, gosh, should we really touch our kids? You know, is that okay?" But that's so important. But he found out that they had never been appropriately touched at home, and now they were looking for it in outside relationships. So we not only bless our kids and build up their value, we also protect them when we bless them.
Our time is almost gone, and we're not going to get to all five of those points, Gary. Last time you and I went through 5 points in your book, I said, "You're just going to have to buy the book." I think I'm going to say that again this time.
Right.
But do you all recommend a specific ceremony of any sort for blessing?
Yes. In fact, in the back part of this book, we have several different sections of Scripture where we just put a blank line in it, and you can insert your children's name there. And I've done this with my children. I sit down on the bed sometimes at night, and I read this verse to them, and I insert their name. So it's just a real special kind of a blessing. Plus, you know, if we had more time, we could talk about the actual importance of spoken word and the kinds of things we can say to our children that really builds a sense of approval within them.
Mm. John, we have a minute or two. Let me ask you about the person who didn't get the blessing, the person who missed it, and now maybe their children are grown and gone, and maybe their parents are dead. What happens to them?
Well, one of the things that we talk about in the book and really encourage is the exciting thing is that our Heavenly Father offers each one of those five elements of the blessing is something He offers to us in a personal relationship with Him and with our spiritual family. For some people, the only blessing they're ever going to get is from a spiritual father at church or from a spiritual mother. Because that's what 1 Timothy talks about, that we're to treat older men that way and younger women in a certain way to where it's our spiritual family. That's one thing. Another thing that they can do, though, is to really be honest with their situation and look into their parents' background. We're not trying to say that parents are terrible, demeaning kinds of people on purpose by any means. But in most cases, if they never got the blessing, they'll have a hard time passing it on.
In fact, Jim, what we found is that when a man and a mom and dad, if they didn't receive the blessing themselves, let's say, what usually will happen is that they can't give it. And so when a son or a daughter is trying to seek that from them, it's almost like hugging a lamp. Yeah. You know, they keep hugging the lamp. They keep saying, I want this lamp to respond, but the lamp is not going to respond. They need to go to a place where they're going to get that blessing. Yeah. And God established that in the church. He established it, you know, maybe it's their own children if they're already married. But that's really where they're going to get. They're probably not going to get it from that.
And when the mother or father can't give the blessing, they probably never got it themselves.
And that's right. Why they can return it and give it first to their parents.
Your book spells out how to go about doing this, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Not only the why, but the how.
Right.
It's called A Blessing by Gary Smalley and John Trent, and I want to read the heading again. No matter your age, the approval of your parents affects how you view yourself and your ability to pass that approval along to your children, spouse, and friends. Many people spend a lifetime looking for this acceptance the Bible calls the blessing. And, Mike, we will make this book available.
We sure will.
Will you gentlemen come back every time you write a book? Just come on by. Whenever you get one written, just come on by and we'll talk about it.
Would that be a privilege?
God bless you all. I know that you're doing so much good in your seminars across the country. Your value system is rooted in the Word. You love the Lord, don't you?
Amen.
And there are thousands of people that are being touched by your ministry each year, and it's a pleasure to have you share it with us.
Well, thanks so much for having us on, Jim.
It's a privilege to be here, Jim.
And with that, we come to the end of this Focus on the Family cassette with special guests Gary Smalley and Dr. John Trent. We'd like you to know that Focus on the Family has in supply both of Gary Smalley's books, The Key to Your Child's Heart and The Blessing. Write to us for further information on how we can supply you with either of these resources. You may address your correspondence to Focus on the Family, Box 500, Arcadia, California, 91006. And thank you for listening.